Three.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock band. Redbeard, and today in the studio, Sir Paul McCartney returns for the conclusion of the number one songs behind the expanded deluxe edition of the best-selling album in the 21st century.
Lady Madonna, children at your feet.
Well, we always tried to make a change. See, we're from the sensibility that says, you know, every song's a single. When we started, things weren't in stereo. So it all just came out of like a car speaker, just one speaker or a speaker on the wall. So it was easy to source. You'd just look up and say, there's our record. And he wasn't over in the other side of the room as well. It was just there, you know. So I think it led you to start thinking in terms of what's the song that's on coming out of that box on that wall. It's just one song. So it focused you down. You didn't think, oh, it's a whole album of songs. We were very singles orientated, so that every time you sat down to write a song, it was a potential single.
Let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be.
You know, we were put on such a pedestal, and we had everybody, the whole world was sort of bowing and scraping to us. And what happens in that condition, I think anybody who has any sense, you realize that there's more to life than this.
Whisper world of wisdom, let it be.
Hello, I'm George Harrison in the studio.
Hello, I'm Paul McCartney in the studio.
It was their original songs and, along with producer George Martin, their talents as record makers that set the Beatles apart from the rest of the record business by 1965. You see, before the Beatles' unparalleled worldwide success, most singers and bands in the pop world neither wrote their own songs nor played their own instruments on their records. Here's Paul McCartney with me in the studio.
We were loving being set free in a recording studio. Because, you know, for the first bit of our career, of course, it was so old-fashioned in those days that, like, all the engineers had to wear white shirts and ties. There was none of this casual T-shirts, you know.
And could you, the performer, even touch the...
We weren't even allowed in the control room.
We weren't allowed in the control
room. We just didn't go in the control room. We let ourselves in by the tradesman's entrance with the equipment. We brought the equipment in. We set it up. And we went, like, to the pub, you know, have a drink, and then we'd come back at the designated time, work for the man in the control room. And if we were very lucky, at the end of the session, you'd say, oh, okay, chaps, would you like to come and have a listen? We said, oh, yeah, not off. Whoa, you know, hey, being allowed into the holy of holies, you know. And there we were. We'd get in there and say, oh, this sounds just like a record. Because they'd put a bit of echo on it, you know, and they'd just sweeten it up a bit.
Yeah.
So, oh, it's fabulous, sounds like a record. And they'd say, well, that's what we're here for, boys. We go, yeah, wow. And I mean, the magic of it was all just too much for us to handle. So it was lovely. It was a lovely, innocent period where we got most of our recording.
Lady Madonna was a single-only release that went to number one in the U.S. and U.K. in March and April 1968. Prior to the album Rubber Soul in 65, albums were mostly collections of previously released singles with filler songs. Often they were covers. With Rubber Soul, the Beatles introduced the album as a complete original artistic statement, on par with a novel or a film. The Beatles' record-setting success gave them unprecedented creative license to cross over the blood-brain barrier to the recording studio control room, simultaneously unlocking their musical imagination while changing how recordings would forever be made. Here's Paul McCartney.
Well, we always tried to make a change. See, we're from the sensibility that says, you know, every song's a single. When we started, things weren't in stereo. So it all just came out of like a car speaker, just one speaker or a speaker on the wall. So it was easy to source. You'd just look up and say, there's our record. And he wasn't over in the other side of the room as well. It was just there, you know. So I think it led you to start thinking in terms of, what's the song that's on coming out of that box on that wall? It's just one song. So it focused you down. You didn't think, oh, it's a whole album of songs. We were very singles orientated, so that every time you sat down to write a song, it was a potential single, which I think was good because it kind of focused us to that end. So consequently, if that was what you were doing, a song, end of story, new song, beginning of new story, when that was done, end of story, new song, we would do things like, we'd say to Ringo, hey man, you used that snare drum on the last track? And he'd say, yeah. We'd say, well, we don't want it this next track. We've just made a record with that sound on it. Let's look around now. Why don't you just bang a tabletop or something for a new noise? We wanted every single track we did, I think because of this mono singles focusing that we'd come out of, to be a completely new departure. There didn't seem to be any sense to us if you just put an album on and the drums sounded the same all the way through. It did mean then that as each little song unfolded, you went, oh, we're in a new place. Oh, good. We're at a new point in time. Oh, good. And I think it was more subliminal. I don't think you went, well, man, he's got a new kit. You just went, oh, we're somewhere else. You know, we're somewhere else now.
Surprisingly, the cessation of touring by the Beatles in 1966 had some unintended consequences later for Paul McCartney.
Hey Jude, for instance, we never played. I only played it once after we recorded it. We recorded it in Trident Studios in Soho, London. And Ringo had just gone to the toilet, which was kind of just through the studio. And I didn't know. I hadn't seen him just go out. He just ducked out. I thought he was back in his drum booth, which was like hidden from us over the back. So I started, you know, hey Jude, ding, 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 don't make it, man. And I'm working through this, a long intro without the drums. As I'm halfway through, I suddenly see this figure creeping along behind me. It's Ringo. He's just finished the toilet. He's trying to get to the drum kit. He realizes we're on a take, you know, and he doesn't want to break it up. It looks like it's going good. This is the one. This was the take. So he sits down just in time to go, doo 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 doo, poof, and he's in, you know. Go, oh, dear me, that man is blessed. You know, anyone else would have fallen over or hit a cymbal or something.
Hey Jude was number one for 9 weeks in the U.S. from September through November 1968. The non-album single Hey Jude was modified slightly from its working title Hey Jules after John Lennon's firstborn, Julian.
And then I never sang it after that except to do the video. I think we did a live vocal on the video. I can't remember. It was a nice video to do, and we had a lot of fun. But after that, I never did it. The Beatles weren't touring anymore. There was never really anyone who sort of said to me, go on, give us a Jude, Paul. So I never had any call to do it, you know, and I didn't bother. So that's one of the great things for me. It was like Sgt. Pepper, Hey Jude, Fool on the Hill, Gotta Get You My Life, I think, Abbey Road medley. There's quite a few of them that we never got a chance to do with the Beatles. So they're coming up now like real fresh numbers, even though they're probably older than the rest of the stuff. They feel fresher to me than some of the stuff I've been playing for the last few years, you know.
By now, Beatlemania had become a nonstop cultural phenomenon. All of the Beatles had grown up working class in the hardscrabble English seaport town of Liverpool. And although the newfound fame and sudden wealth was piling up, at least one of the Beatles, the youngest, George Harrison, found the avalanche of success to be somewhat unsettling.
You know, when you're young, you're out there trying to make a name for yourself or just trying to make a living or an occupation. And, you know, ego is necessary. You have to have it. But we went through so much. You know, we were put on such a pedestal and we had everybody, the whole world was sort of bowing and scraping to us and press following us around every day. We were on the front page of all the papers for, you know, a couple of years. It seemed like a long time. And what happens in that condition, I think anybody who has any sense, you realize that there's more to life than this. The book, which is the Hindu Bible, is called the Bhagavad Gita. And I don't know if you recall an album I had out called Living in the Material World.
Sure,
sure. Inside of that, there was a picture of Krishna and Arjuna on a chariot what the Bhagavad Gita is all about is that the battlefield and the chariot and the horses, you see, life is the battlefield. We're in our bodies, which is the chariot, on this battlefield, and the horses are all the senses which are pulling us through the battlefield. And unless we have God or something that, you know, whatever you want to call it, to anchor yourself or to help you get through the battlefield, you're just going to crash. You know, all the experience we gain, sometimes you go through terrible things, but they actually turn out to be good because they help you rise above it. So it's all a learning process. I mean, I think life is just like, you know, going to school, and you have to figure it out, learn certain things, and hopefully rise above it.
Even by today's standards, many Beatles hits sport complex musical arrangements far removed from the standard rock and roll lineup of guitar, bass, drums. Again, with me in the studio, Paul McCartney.
And again, you know, we try and change the instrumentation. There'd be like a harmonium on, we can work it out, but that harmonium would hardly ever be seen on the rest of our records. We used it on We Can Work It Out. We blew it, so we can't use it again, you know. Often we do that. The Lowry organ that I played on the front of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, I don't think that ever made an appearance on another record. So this was the philosophy, was like that every single track should be different. Why not?
Get Back was number one for 6 weeks in the UK, 5 weeks in the States, April through June 1969. Next, Paul McCartney and the late George Harrison revealed the beginning to the end of the Beatles. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and be sure to sign up for the weekly e-newsletter at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Paul McCartney for the conclusion of the deluxe expanded Beatles One Plus.
Welcome back. In the studio, I'm Paul McCartney with Redbeard himself.
Thank you so much, Sir Paul. By 1968, several significant events had occurred. As early as 1965, the Beatles had met and talked with American folk music messiah Bob Dylan. They both had a profound influence on the other. After seeing the Beatles' worldwide popularity, Dylan forms a band with electric instruments. The folk music world finds it shocking, while the general public responds by giving Dylan his first number one hit with Like a Rolling Stone. Dylan challenges the Beatles lyrically to go beyond She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. He also introduces the Fab Four to marijuana. By 1968, John Lennon's drug usage had increased, while his writing with Paul McCartney had decreased. George Harrison had begun writing, albeit solitary.
Beatles came from the north of England and heavy industrial area of England. You know, our life of upbringing as kids and the kind of music you heard and, you know, all that. That's all part of it. It's the kind of people we are. And then the music, you know, because that's what I always felt. I'd never really written tunes with other people. I mean, I'd done a bit with Ringo, you know, helped him with songs, but I was very scared about writing songs with other people because it's not easy. Sometimes it's easy, and sometimes, you know, when you're trying to force it out, you know, you can write a lot of rubbish before you get to it.
George Harrison's written and sung Something was number one in the U.S. in November 1969. After having guested on Cream's song Badge, George Harrison invited Cream guitarist Eric Clapton to return the favor on a song that Harrison wrote called While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and then later, Something. Here's George.
You know, a lot of it is has been romanticized and mystified by all these kind of interviews or writers that have written stuff, you know, about this relationship of me and him. They've made it into like a big thing, especially, I suppose, because the fact that I divorced Patty and he married her and then he divorced her. You know, they've kind of made it like as if it's some funny stuff, you know, but to me, it was just life. You know, doesn't everybody do that? But because there's all that stuff that's going on, and it's been so much written about, and sure, you know, when we play, I mean, when I listen, even listening to it back after mixing it for, you know, a month and hearing it 100 times or more, right at the point where I finish my guitar solo and then Eric's solo starts, I just get goosebumps on the back of my neck. I don't know why, what it is, whether it's the fact that we're both there together or if it's just the sound of his guitar, his style. It just, and I, you know, it just does something. it touches beyond the intellect someplace. So it's fun, you know, but we don't really think about ourselves as being legends or icons and stuff like that. We're just kind of just people and you're just doing your job. But every so often something happens like that.
Reaching the top spot in the U.S. in November 1969 was Come Together. This Beatles One collection remains at over 31 million copies, the top-selling album in the world in the 21st century. Paul McCartney reacts to the Beatles' seemingly undying popularity.
Funny thing about the Beatles was it was like 10 years. That was it, from beginning to end, A to Z, really.
Hard to believe.
It was 10 years, whereas like Wings was longer than that, which is crazy. You know, it seems like Wings happened in 5 years and the Beatles went on at least 20.
Exactly.
You know,
and
it was so condensed.
Is the same too.
It was so condensed that in actual fact, it was just 10 little old years, you know. But they were great years, of course, you know, for us. It was fairly crazy. But you can imagine, just, or can you, you know, can you imagine just being kids off the block, just little kids, you know, who'd never had much money, suddenly being allowed to sort of, you know, drive your own car, make your own way in the world, with this incredible freebie of being allowed to go and make records, which is exactly what we wanted. Exactly what the man, you know, what the doctor ordered, you know. And then finally being able to even just stay there all night, you know, and have the run of these studios.
And do what you really loved to do.
Well, it was just like being in Disneyland constantly, you know, you just, whoa. So it's no wonder we made a couple of decent records.
Actually, John Lennon's start to his solo career only bearing the Beatles' name, The Ballad of John and Yoko was a surprising number one in the UK in June and July 1969. Still to come, Paul McCartney and the late George Harrison assess the Beatle years. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and be sure to sign up for the weekly e-newsletter at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Paul McCartney for the conclusion of the deluxe expanded Beatles One Plus.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
Welcome back. In the studio, I'm Paul McCartney with Redbeard himself.
Thanks again, Paul. It's an honor and a pleasure. Prior to George Harrison's death, November 2001, I was blessed with several opportunities to talk with George at length, allowing him to reflect on his remarkable Beatles experience.
Is it easier now than, say, 5 years after Beatles?
Oh, it's much easier now.
Why?
Just because, you know, the water under the bridge is good. You know, time heals everything and put a bit of distance between, you know, now I can just take it, or like all these songs I'm doing, I can just enjoy it and just enjoy it for what it is. I'm more mature, I'm happier, I think I'm healthier.
You seem all those
things. Yeah, and so I'm determined to be able to each day just try to enjoy it and you know, that's what it's about, really. It's just about how to get blissed out. And if there's, you know, any chance that I'm going to be in a negative situation or in something that's painful, then I don't want to do that. I just want to be happy.
The timeless Let It Be was number one in America in April 1970. I asked the singer, Paul McCartney, what the hardest thing is about being a former Beatle.
I don't know. I suppose, like, the hardest thing is the standards you've set yourself. It's a little bit awkward occasionally. You wish you hadn't ever written a decent song, so the next one you'd come up with would be the one that it would be a good one.
So being in competition
with yourself is really a bit sort of tough sometimes. But I'm really not complaining. You won't hear any complaints from me because I mean I really enjoy it. It's a little tough having to try and write something better than Hey Jude or something, you know. And I may not do it. I realize that, you know, but I wrote the first one anyway, so I'm not worried, you know. I feel really, you know, very kind of lucky. I've been very lucky with my family life and my music life. So, I mean, you know, I'm not really, you won't hear too many complaints off me.
Similarly, I asked the late George Harrison about the surprising limitations that emerge from superstardom.
Have you ever envied the journeyman musician who could be in and would be in a number of bands over the course of a career?
Well, I think we all go through our lives and we must do what we must do, you know, and it's like my life, instead of being in a working band, like we started out, I was starting to get good as a musician, and then I got diverted into being a pop star. You know, so I I lost out as far as being a musician goes, whereas, say, Eric, who went, well, as soon as he was becoming a pop star, he joined another band, and he just kept going. I really would have liked in some part of me to have been able to do that. So at this point in my life, I would be a better guitar player. I'd be more fluent.
And your old songs wouldn't be new to you.
Yeah, that's the danger. Well, you know, we all have the ups and downs of our individual lives, and we must do what we must do. So, you know, I'm quite happy as what happened, because, you know, the result of it is that I, you know, what I am now is I wouldn't be this if I'd have been that. You know, it's as simple as that. And I'm quite happy with my lot.
A final word on the Beatles' legacy from Paul McCartney with me in the studio.
The Beatles is a great band, and it's a shame that like all things, you know, it had to come to an end. But having said that, you know, I mean, I regret that it didn't keep going. But things that anybody did, no, not really. I had a ball. It was great, you know. It was really great. I mean, imagine your listeners being able to say, I was in the Beatles. Well, right there, you know, that's a buzz. Just always know that. You know, no matter what happens, you know, they chuck you away in some South American jail, you can go, I was in the Beatles. Hey. And they go, hey, I don't believe it, man. Hey, get out of here. I say, sure, I was. I spent 3 months persuading them, you know. Not that I'm going to be in some South American jail, by the way. Touch wood, please. Anyway, but so that's a great sort of buzz. And so I don't think you could have any regrets about that. And then I've been amazingly lucky since. You know, I've had this kind of thing with Wings, which like did great. And then I've had this kind of third, you know, life really with the new band, which is, it's beautiful, you know, and we're having a ball. We're just enjoying it. I mean, there were a lot of things, you know, where people kind of saying, oh, you're following the Beatles, or you've got to be as good as Wings and stuff. But we just kind of bit the bullet, as they said, and just said, let's just get a band. Let's just really try and be good. Let's get a nice selection of songs. Let's just commit to it and go and do it. And it's worked out.
The long and winding road of the Beatles had some surprising speed bumps and hazards, which are revealed in Fred Goodman's excellent biography of manager Alan Klein, the man who bailed out the Beatles, made the Rolling Stones, and transformed rock and roll. And the Beatles One Plus is available in stores and online now. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest Paul McCartney, and God rest the soul of George Harrison. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2015, all rights reserved, transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune, theme song by Annie Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.